Hello.
Welcome back to another episode of Diagnosing a Killer. I'm tired of being sweaty and hot. My name is Kowal.
And I'm Kenna. And I also have a raging cold sore. And it hurts when I smile. Ow. Good thing it's not my case.
Yeah, good thing it's not your case and we're talking about murder.
I won't be smiling.
Ugh, yeah. Yeah, we don't have air conditioning at my store right now. And it is hot, 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 hot.
I haven't told you this yet, but today I was at work and our air conditioning went out and they sent everyone home within 30 minutes. And you've been working with that AC for like six months. I went home early today because the AC...
You bitch. They've changed our hours, which is fine, you know?
I felt guilty, though. I was like, it wasn't even that hot. I was like, I'm fine.
I was telling Kenna that with how hot it is, it's so hard to think. And so I was trying to write a little bit on my break, and nothing was coming to me. I was just staring blankly into my phone, because it's just oppressive.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty wicked hot down here.
I think it's... funny, just based on location, because, you know, in Michigan, they don't have air conditioners in a lot of places.
For sure.
They just have heaters.
Same thing in Europe.
Their heaters are so nice, too, because they don't get... like, here, it's really annoying turning on the heater for the first time in the winter months because it smells like sulfur.
It smells like dust.
It smells like burnt dust. But it's just dry heat here, but like for some reason in Michigan it just feels toasty.
Yeah,
it feels nice.
It's cozy.
I think they just have a different heating thing, maybe.
So
I don't know.
Any
news?
I don't think so. We did get 3 Patreon members recently, so just a big thank you to Brittany, Jennifer, and Tara. You guys are awesome, and I'm super excited for y'all to listen to the new bonus episodes. Mm-hmm. If anybody is unfamiliar, we do have a Patreon. We have 4 tiers there. Our tier 1 peeps will get ad-free mental breakdowns every week. Tiers 2, 3, and 4 will get ad-free every episode that we release. Tiers 3 and 4 only will get additional bonus episodes. That's once a month at the end of the month. They're super gory, no content warning, just right to the point, no banter, nothing. And you guys know what you signed up for. There's about 12 of those out right now. We have another one coming up soon. Mm-hmm. So if you would like access to those bonus episodes, go ahead and go over to patreon.com/diagnosingakiller. It takes just a few seconds to sign up, and it really makes a big difference in our show.
Yeah, that's some gruesome, unedited content right there, folks.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. If you know what we're about and you want to hear, well, really, we don't edit them at all.
We don't.
So, yeah, it's also a lot of us giggling and stuff like that, too.
And a huge thank you to our current Patreon supporters. You guys are awesome.
Yeah, for sure. And you're getting those free goodies coming your way.
Oh, yeah.
Very soon. So keep an eye out in your post.
Absolutely. Speaking of free goodies, we are less than a month out from the True Crime and Paranormal Podcast Festival. That is in Denver, Colorado, from the 12th through the 14th. It's my birthday weekend. Come out and hang out with us and come see us.
Cold beer.
Butt scratcher.
What's
that? Butt scratcher. It's a Family Guy bit, but it's instead of cold beer, he's like in the stands like butt scratches. Butt scratches.
Selling butt scratchers. Butt scratchers.
Yeah.
I like cold beer.
Anyway, come see us at the festival. You guys have a few weeks to get your tickets, and we are so excited to see everyone.
Yeah. Not a stressful topic at all.
Yeah. Anything else?
I don't think so. I think we're good. Yeah, check us out anywhere on social media at Diagnosing a Killer. Other than X, formerly known as Twitter, which is at Killer Diagnosis. Email us, Venmo us, PayPal us, Cash App us.
Yeah, if you want. At Diagnosing a Killer really makes a difference in the show. And it helps us get out some additional content as well quicker.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, I'm excited to see what you have.
Are you ready?
Yes. I hope it's not the person that I've been researching for the last hour.
Is it a lady?
No.
Okay. Well, then
Is he the lady?
Have you been watching The Jinx season 2?
No, I haven't.
I watched all of it. I binged it. And it's so good.
I haven't even gotten through the first one.
Rest in Distress, Robert Durst.
Yeah, I'll have to finish it at some point.
Today, we're going to be talking about Andrea Yates.
Oh, shit, yeah. Not yeah, but like... Sorry.
Oh, fuck yeah!
I honestly don't know the story. I just know, like, the name. I've probably heard the story, but it's been a while. So okay. I'm excited to get your take on it.
It's pretty interesting, so we're going to get into it. Oh, and just a reminder, we do not do content warnings at the beginning of the episode any longer for each other. By the time you hear this or this portion or whatever, there's going to be a content warning just recorded later and then input in here.
Yeah.
So that Kenna doesn't know anything about the story. It makes for a way better genuine reaction.
For sure.
Content warning. This episode contains topics of religion, postpartum depression, major depressive disorder, self-harm, suicidal thoughts, suicide attempts, and ultimately, child murder. If this episode is not for you, we encourage you to find another one of our episodes. Remember that your mental health comes first, and we love you.
Love you.
Bye. Bye. Andrea Pia Kennedy was born July 2nd, 1964, to parents Judah Kohler, who immigrated from Germany, and Andrew Kennedy, who was a first-generation American, Irish-American. Okay. Andrea was born in Houston, Texas, and by the time Andrea came along, she had already had four older siblings, Patrick, Michelle, Brian, and Andrew Jr. Andrea's home life was pretty unremarkable. The family was raised Roman Catholic in a traditional home setting. However, Andrea began showing signs of mental struggles at an early age. She started struggling with her body image, which developed into an eating disorder by her adolescence, and she was often depressed. It is not clear whether Andrea intentionally self-harmed. However, by age 17, she was telling high school friends that she had often dealt with suicidal thoughts. Mm. Andrea attended Milby High School in East Houston, and by all accounts, she appeared to be very successful in most anything she tackled academically. She was the captain of the swim team and was an officer in the National Honor Society. Andrea would even finish school as valedictorian of her graduating class. After high school, Andrea set her sights on college. She enrolled in a two-year nursing program at the University of Houston and would eventually transfer to the University of Texas Health Science Center in Houston. She graduated with a BSN in 1986. Oof. Immediately, she began working as an RN, or a registered nurse, at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. With all of her focus solely on schooling and working, Andrea never left much time for dating or romantic interests. For Andrea, she almost seemed to flourish solo. However, with her life mostly stable, she opted to explore the dating world. She met a man at age 23, and the two seemed to mesh well. However, this romance was short-lived, and unfortunately, Andrea would take the breakup extremely hard. She spiraled into a deep depression, and once again, Andrea told others that she was struggling with suicidal thoughts. Andrea would not seek professional help, but she did try to pick herself up on her own. We know how successful that is.
Yeah.
Andrea was living in an apartment complex on the southeast side of Houston in 1989, where she would often swim in the community pool. One day, while Andrea was lounging and swimming at the pool, she would meet a man who would change the course of her life forever.
Oh, no. Dun, dun, dun.
Bah, bah, bah. A young man by the name of Rusty approached Andrea and struck up a conversation when he realized that she was a good swimmer.
You're a real good swimmer.
Yeah, you... What them arms do. Rusty would later say that Andrea loved water and that she looked more graceful in it than out of it.
Okay.
Russell Rusty Yates was one of five children who grew up in the suburbs of Nashville, Tennessee, and the family was raised in a traditionally religious household. Not sure if it was evangelistic or evangelism, Catholicism, or Methodist. I saw very differing things, but the point is that he was raised very religiously.
I was going to try to help you on that first one, but I don't know how to pronounce that word, so I just let you do it.
Evangelistic?
Evangelism,
maybe. It's just evangelism, right? Yeah.
Evangelism. Vandalism.
Vandalism. He got really into vandalism.
Yeah, that was his religion.
Just a total 180. He became a high school football star, and when Rusty was granted an athletic scholarship, he opted to move to Alabama, attending Auburn University. Sometime during his schooling, Rusty became disenchanted with athletics and decided to focus on a Bachelor's of Applied Science. While walking through the campus one day, Rusty met a man by the name of Michael Warnecki. Michael Warnecki, nicknamed Mike War, is a very outspoken religious missionary who would often go to college campuses screaming through a megaphone that students were damned and going to hell unless they repent and all that good stuff, right?
We've all seen him.
We've seen him. I like that lady with the margaritas. She's like, one margarita, she's gonna want to kiss you. And all the frat boys are like, yeah! She's,
oh my God.
Two margaritas, she might even take her top off. And they're like, yeah! Like, it's so funny. Three margaritas, and she's like, yeah! Like, it just keeps
so good.
Oh, it's so funny. That's a good one. I don't remember if that was Vine, TikTok, or like, I don't know. Either way. So within the week, Rusty had gotten some pamphlets from this guy, Michael, and Rusty was emailing Michael, and the two kind of began a back and forth about religion, and Michael would eventually take Rusty kind of under his wing, almost like he was his mentor.
Great.
Great, great stuff. Michael said about meeting Rusty for the first time, quote, "I was preaching on the campus. He was a typical college kid, had good grades. It was kind of cool because there was, like, this understanding between us that there was hypocrisy in religion. That was the foundation for our relationship," end quote. Oh. Rusty would graduate in 1987, and before too long, he sets his sights on Houston, Texas, home of NASA. Rusty would apply to be hired as a senior systems engineer, making about $80,000 a year, which is the equivalent of, because this was the 80s, yeah, and it's been long enough that there is actually a conversion. it's about $200,000 a year.
Damn, that's really good. Not starting, but I guess like first job out of college.
Yeah.
It's really good.
How many pounds sterling is that, you ask? It is 156,414 pounds.
Wow.
That's a lot. All this time, he was consistently contacting Michael Warnecki. Being a Christian man, and by the suggestion of Michael, Rusty quickly found a local church and even began volunteering regularly, really entrenching himself into his congregation. Rusty was pretty much an established young man. He had almost everything he could want besides a partner to share it with.
The lonely man.
He's just so
lonely. Meets the Moidera.
All this to give some wonderful woman.
He's just a nice guy. Why do nice guys always finish last?
I don't understand.
They
I'm such a nice
the assholes.
The only one. Whoa, this turned into Elliot Rodger real quick. By the time Rusty met Andrea, he believed that this was destiny. He has everything any woman could ever want.
And she can swim.
And she can swim like a mermaid. Ugh. Awesome. The two had hit it off, and when Rusty told Michael of his new relationship, Michael told Rusty to be cautious and not to jump into marriage right away.
Little girls are the devil.
They didn't.
Did you hear Dad clear so really loud? Well, I can't cut that out because I said that really funny joke.
What?
That really funny, not joke, that line from the devil movie.
Oh, you won't get sued. Everybody quotes that. Little girls are the devil. So Michael had very strong beliefs about the partnership between Rusty and Andrea. He pretty much preached that essentially all women inherit the sins of Eve, when all men inherit Adam's good nature. So all women are sinful because that's what they got from Eve. But Adam is inherently good.
Mm-hmm.
He's just a good guy. He's the nice guy.
That's why he married the spawn of, or the mom of all the demons.
And what?
Adam, like, his first wife was Lilith.
Oh.
Well, I'm watching Lucifer right now, so that's what they say.
Clearly Adam is good-natured. Maybe he's not the smartest chip on the block.
No. I don't know him from Adam, so I can't really say.
I don't know him from Adam. Rusty, too,
I like that laugh.
Rusty, too, began to believe in this, and as his mentor, Michael's word was taken as gold to not marry too quickly.
So he can, like, fuck around with her, but he just can't marry her? What's the difference? I mean, obviously the difference is the piece of paper, but, like, if she's, sin and concentrate. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, why is he interacting with her at all?
Incarnate, is what you meant?
Yes. Well, concentrate still makes sense.
I think what Michael is saying, that all women are born with a sin, right? It's the sin of being a woman.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, why wouldn't he be like, don't interact with women at all? Instead of just like, oh, you can do whatever you want, just don't marry her.
Well, you can't. I mean, you can't be gay either, so I don't really know what you
mean. Celibate.
You're not allowed to be gay, and you're not. You have to be with a woman that is absolutely sinful. And so it's, like, essentially your duty as Adam of the relationship is to, like, help her not be sinful.
Oh, okay, I got it.
Is kind of what, yeah. So it's, like, somehow that makes sense as a perfect match.
Yeah.
You know? It's just, I don't freaking know. Jargon. Rusty maintained the relationship with Andrea for 4 years before they did eventually get married. It was very clear from the beginning of their marriage that Rusty did not want his wife to use any type of contraceptives, and said that it is his intention to have, quote, accept as many children as God sent their way, end quote.
Hmm.
The relationship seemed to do well, but the only real struggle that the couple seemed to deal with was communication. Rusty and Andrea would get frustrated with each other, just like all young couples, but Rusty would almost always be met with a very reserved and quiet Andrea when it came to confrontation.
Okay.
She essentially just avoided it at all costs. Just a few short months after getting hitched, the couple welcomed their first child, Noah.
Aptly named.
Oh, yeah, they're all religious. With the welcoming of their first child, it seemed it was the end of Andrea's working career. It was Rusty's view that the perfect family that God intended involved the wife and mother to be raising the children at home while the man worked. So Andrea, of course, quit her job. Andrea was excited to become a new mother. She loved little Noah and was always seen smiling with him in her arms. However, Andrea, shortly after Noah's birth, would have very intense dreams and often had images flash across her mind of a stabbing situation, often with her holding a knife.
I was going to ask, how old are they? They're like mid-20s at this point?
Yeah, I think when they met, well, her first failed relationship was 23. I think she met Rusty the following year, so 24.
Okay, yeah.
And then, well, I guess she would have been 28 then at this mm-hmm. point, because they've been married for 4 years and quickly had Noah.
Okay.
Andrea would say that these dreams scared her, but that she never really felt out of control in the dreams. She felt like she had total control of who she was and what she was doing, like lucid dreams, right?
Okay.
She felt that maybe she was dealing with some postpartum weepies, more commonly referred to as baby blues, which is a normal reaction to hormone levels fluctuating after birth. And after a while, Andrea did begin to feel better with time. Within a year of Noah's birth, Andrea found out that they would be having another child, John. 2 kids in 2 years, and Andrea began to feel somewhat overwhelmed. She had the help of her mother and her mother-in-law, thankfully, but a short time after John was born, Rusty was offered a position in Miami. Taking this opportunity, Rusty packed up the family and moved the four into a travel home, which was essentially an old Greyhound bus that they had refurbished or something.
Okay.
Fine, right? But you also have 2 little children.
2 under 2.
Yeah, 2 under 2. This job only lasted for 6 months.
Oh my God.
And then the family would return to outside of Houston area into a mobile home. Hmm. So still kind of a small living situation.
Well, with all these kids he wants to have, like, right. What is he going to do?
Yeah, for sure. They'll just rent a bus like the Partridge Family.
Yeah.
I mean, right? That worked for
them. The magic school bus.
The magic school bus full of children. Soon, Andrea would become pregnant again with their 3rd child, Paul. During this time, Rusty began to see somewhat of a change in Andrea, his wife. Needing to confide in his friend and mentor, Michael, Rusty then reached out saying that his wife seemed not to be enjoying their life together anymore and that she seemed off.
Well, she's having babies left and right. She's probably not having any time to have her hormones back in balance.
Gave up her job.
Yeah.
To be your baby factory.
Yeah, seriously.
God. Michael would offer to reach out to Andrea to speak with her directly, which Rusty agreed. He's like, sure, here's my wife's number. Go for it. I think it was email, but either way. Although he was just as harsh on her as he would be on anyone on a college campus, saying things like, quote, God knows how wicked you are. You must accept the reality that your life is under the curse of sin and death. You are the daughter of Eve, end quote.
Oh, great. Yeah, that's really an enticing way that she's going to want to respond.
Mm-hmm. Quote, you must become a daughter of the Most High, end quote.
The fuck does that even mean?
I guess like, a daughter of God instead of a daughter of Eve.
Yeah.
Which is like, God made Eve, so yeah. I don't understand.
Stupid.
I won't get into it.
Mumbo jumbo.
Michael had even said on many occasions that Rusty and Andrea's children were already destined for hell, as their parents, being Rusty and Andrea, are full of sin. In order to save their children, they must do more, dedicate more of themselves to God, and essentially do everything asked of him, being God. Michael also preached, and Rusty repeated several times to Andrea, that after the age of 14 or 15, the hopes that your child will go to heaven are over. This is why it's so important to keep your life as parents sin-free, and for the women to stay home to watch the children, so that there are no other influences on the child. Because by 14 or 15, they are exposed to the world more, and if they don't have a strong sense of self or what to watch out for, they will go to hell regardless. So you only have until they're 14 or 15 years old to, like, prep them or, like, train them or whatever you want to say for them to be protected by the outside world.
I feel like this could very easily turn into, like, a, don't let your kids get full of sin. Just go ahead and kill them when they're 14.
Right. Like that's all the life they're allowed. That's all the life they're allowed to live.
Also, stay the fuck out of my life, Michael. Like, who the fuck are you?
Well, Rusty's, like, clearly doesn't have a brain for himself. So he's like, oh, Michael, tell me what to do, Michael. Gross. Wasn't the Archangel Michael?
Yeah, when Lucifer, like, rebelled against God, Michael was, like, he, like, essentially stood with his arms crossed and was, like, I'm backing God.
Well, there we go.
Yeah.
See?
They don't wild. Like each other.
They don't like each other. So, yeah, one could imagine that this is a great environment for someone who's dealing with mental health issues, right? To top all of this pressure off, Andrea's father was actually diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and she would often take the kiddos over to her parents' place to help around the house as well. Mm. So not only is she taking care of three of her kids, she's taking the kids over to her parents' place so that she can help her mother and stuff like that as well. So,
and she's probably tasked with taking care of Rusty as well.
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to say homeboy, but I forgot his name and then it came to me, Rusty.
Sometimes Andrea was just thankful to just have another adult around to help with her babies.
Mm-hmm.
Rusty often worked long hours and late hours or would go out of town for work. So Andrea was always coaching and growing the children on her own. She would help them reach milestones, educate the babies from home. She never hired a nanny, a babysitter, or enrolled them in any type of childcare. It was paramount in Andrea and Rusty's minds that she, the mother, is the only one educating and where the caring came from.
Which is funny because they're saying that she's full of sin, so why wouldn't she teach? If that's true, why wouldn't they think that, all she's going to teach her children is sin? You're full of sin, but we're going to trust you to teach these children to not be full of sin.
I don't know if that's necessarily what they mean. I think they're saying, like, you're born into sin, and therefore, essentially, you pay for it your whole life by repenting.
Yeah,
You know?
Fucking assholes.
Yeah. I think that maybe Andrea took it like that. Like, yeah. I'm full of sin. But I don't think that that was the intention behind what they were telling her.
Well, gotta be more clear sometimes, guys, because people don't know what you mean.
Because shit like this happens.
Yeah.
Furthermore, the couple stopped attending their local church and instead opted to host Bible study at their own home 3 days a week, which is more pressure. Got to keep the house clean because mm-hmm. everybody's coming over. It's just, ugh. Then you have to host all these people.
He's like, Andrea, while you're at it, honey, can you whip up dinner for 50?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, yes, the Johnsons are coming over and their entire family.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You also need to be baking 4 cakes. In February 1999, the couple would have their fourth child, Luke. All seemed normal the first few months after Luke's birth. However, by June, Rusty would come home from work and find his wife, Andrea, cowering in the corner of the living room. She was in a catatonic-like state.
What?
She had chewed her fingernails down to the bone, and she was uncontrollably shaking. Andrea looked up at Rusty and only said, quote, I need help. End quote.
Oh, that's horrible.
Heaves.
Wait, do they have 4 boys?
They have four boys.
Oh, gosh. That's not that they have four boys, but that's horrible what she's going through.
Rusty, however, did not take Andrea to the hospital that evening. Since he was home, he thought everything would be okay for a night.
Just pray it away.
Just pray it away. Let's shake it off. Instead, the next morning, he drove the family over to Andrea's parents' house, where he left her and the kids in order to go to work.
She'll help talk some sense into her daughter.
Yeah. Well, she'll be fine, and maybe she just needs to get out of the house.
All right, Freud. If you want great tasting meals daily, but can't find the time to shop or even cook, we have the solution for you. Fresh Meal Plan is a convenient, easy way to create custom meals delivered right to your door. With hundreds of rotating meals each week, there's always something new to look forward to. Many of their meals are ready in 3 minutes or less, so you don't have to spend all night cooking. Just select your meals, heat, eat, and bon appetit. Click the link in our show notes today for an exclusive offer with Fresh Meal Plan and create the perfect menu for you.
Later in the day, while the kids and her parents were sleeping, Andrea ingested 40 trazodone pills in an effort to overdose.
40?
40 pills.
Jeez.
Andrea was found by her mother, who then rushed her to the hospital in an effort to save her life. Andrea would survive this first suicide attempt. Once Andrea was stabilized, she was transferred to a psychiatric hospital for evaluation. Her doctor diagnosed her with major depressive disorder, which is something that runs in Andrea's family.
Weird.
Wild, right?
I'll fucking say.
Andrea believed that this was impossible because, in her words, she, quote, never cried, end quote.
Whoa.
And therefore was not depressed.
What a thought. Oh my gosh.
She's like, well, I don't
cry. Ooh, that gives me chills. Like,
right?
This is why we educate people, because that's not a thing. Like, that doesn't matter. You're depressed. Like, oh my gosh, that's interesting that she thought that, though.
Well, yeah, that it's, I couldn't be depressed because I don't cry. Well, if you're not, everybody handles emotion differently. I just feel like if you feel like you're someone who never cries, what have you been taught somewhere in your life that you can't feel that emotion?
Yeah, but also, like, if you think about the word depressed,
mm-hmm.
depressed does not mean sad. Depressed means lacking thereof. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it's small, like, it's squeezed in a little tiny ball.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean, she said, I'm not sad. That I feel like that would be a little bit different. I've never cried. That's sad or whatever.
Right.
Depressed means defeated or, like, you know, deflated kind of.
Yeah, pushed down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just really interesting.
Yeah. So interesting. Wow. She never cries.
This is what we do.
Because big girls don't cry.
It was also determined by Andrea's doctor that given Andrea's state, there would likely have been plenty of warning signs pre-catatonia.
Weird.
So he was like, this isn't something that just happens.
Yeah.
This is someone who has been dealing with stuff for a long time.
And this is the result of it.
Yes.
Well, how would Rusty know? He's always at work, and she's just at home by herself with children that probably can't recognize those things.
Yeah, of course.
And he doesn't care.
Her sole role is to be a good mother.
And when she finally got enough and asked for help, he's like, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Go spend some time with your mom.
The doctor had determined that her condition was one that was continued to worsen due to lack of care.
Yeah.
It's like an infection,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. And again, no chance for her hormones to get rebalanced. She's having child after child.
Mm-hmm.
That's got to be so tough on your brain.
During her evaluation, Andrea was very remorseful for trying to take her own life. She had told the nurse several times that she loved her family very much. And she also expressed her concern multiple times of whether or not she could still breastfeed with the medication that she took.
Oh, wow.
She was like, well, I took all this medication, but I still need to feed my child.
Dang.
Like, that is what's in her head. Like, you know?
Yeah, that sounds like it was almost like a dissociative state. Like, so defeated, I'm just going to take all these pills. Like, not even thinking about anything else.
Yeah.
And then when she comes to, she's like, oh, fuck, like, what did I do? Like, I have a family to feed. Like, who's going to take care of my children? Because obviously their dad isn't.
Right. Well, I don't know if she thought that far, but she definitely was, like, concerned, like, how soon can I breastfeed
mm-hmm.
with all this in my system? Like, always thinking of everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So she very clearly cared for her children. Andrea would stay in the hospital for a few days, but Andrea never seemed to want to participate in group therapy. She would often retreat to her room or make excuses as why she wouldn't want to go. She often told doctors and nurses about what was going on through her mind during her suicide attempt. She would say things like, quote, I don't know, or I can't remember, end quote.
Again, it's dissociative. I mean, she's already catatonic. Who knows how long she was catatonic before that happened?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's completely dissociating from your environment, right. You know?
She had also said, quote, I guess I'm just overwhelmed and depressed, end quote. Like, I guess I'm overwhelmed and depressed. Which sounds to me like she's saying that because someone told her that.
Yeah.
A doctor said, are you overwhelmed? You must be overwhelmed. How overwhelmed you must be.
Mm-hmm.
Depressed, you're major depressive. Like, so I guess I'm overwhelmed and depressed.
Right. It's like she doesn't know how, like, she's not explaining why she's feeling that way or how she came to that conclusion. It's just like, I guess. I mean, it makes sense. If I try to take my own life, I must be depressed.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever.
I must be overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's not her having those feelings.
Yeah, her saying, like, I feel worthless or whatever.
Yeah. Unfortunately, due to her insurance, she was only allowed to stay for about 4 to 5 days, which was under the amount of days recommended by her doctor for treatment. Ultimately, the psychiatrist would prescribe Andrea with an antidepressant, and Rusty himself discharged his wife from the hospital, claiming that he would look after Andrea, and when he wasn't there, he would ensure either his parents or her parents would be there.
Because
They were like, literally, don't leave her alone.
Yeah.
You like, can't.
It's very serious.
Yes. The doctor warned Rusty that Andrea's mental illness isn't something that goes away. The antidepressants are there to help stabilize her, but the doctor recommended not having any more children, as this is seemingly why Andrea's triggers pop up
yeah.
and essentially send her into a spiral.
Every time she has a child?
Yes, essentially. It's like you said, it's fluctuation all the time. There's no stabilizing.
And not for nothing, but when you're trying to get those type of medications stabilized, it's not really safe to try to have a child at the same time. Because again, all the emotions and hormones and everything, it's going to imbalance everything. And it's going to take, at the very minimum, 6 months for that medication to stabilize.
I agree. Andrea was released from the hospital and into the care of her husband. Once home, Andrea would continue medication for some time, but after a while, she began complaining about having to take it. She believed that the drugs that she was taking were some type of truth serum, which is interesting to me because I don't think that she would claim that unless she wasn't taking her medication. Because I feel like the medication was there to help regulate those thoughts and feelings.
Yeah.
In combination with her skipping medication on occasion, she believed it more and more, which also contributes to it.
Of course.
Sounds like she kind of started skipping it, then this thought entered her head, so she started taking it
and
less.
And she's like, shit, I need to stop taking that.
Yeah. Eventually, Andrea had stopped taking her medication altogether, and perhaps worse than that, Rusty and Andrea found out that Andrea was pregnant again, just 7 weeks after her release.
That's Rusty, keep it in your fucking pants, dude.
You can't. It's what the Lord wants.
Oh my God, that's horrible.
It's a doctor specifically told you not to have any children, at least for a little bit.
Yeah.
Not
give me a fucking year.
A month and a half later.
That's crazy.
Wild. This time they were expecting a baby girl named Mary. Mary was born in November of 2000, and in early 2001, Andrea's father was placed in a hospice facility. One would assume that maybe this would lend some type of relief to Andrea, now that she wouldn't have to check on him as regularly. But Andrea instead opted to drive out to see her father with all 5 of her children regularly. And I think it was a bit of a drive. I didn't specifically Google map it, but it seemed like it would be maybe like a 40-minute drive.
Even if it's the next neighborhood over, getting 5 children in the car.
In the car.
To the destination is probably difficult.
Especially to get all of their shoes. Because, like, yeah. I had one kid and he would drop his shoes all the time getting him into the car seat. So this arrangement was short-lived, as Andrea's father would pass away in about February or March of 2001. When Andrea's father passed away, Andrea herself drove to be there with her father. But upon her arrival, seeing the sight of her father's lifeless body was too much for her.
Yeah. I was like, that's not a good idea.
Not when she's dealing with so much. When she returned home, she was never the same. She laid in bed for hours, would huddle corners of the home, and basically was in shambles.
God, that's so horrible. And her husband's just like, hey, what's for dinner?
Where's my sandwich?
Well, I'm serious. Like, that sounds like what he's like. He's
the kids in bed? Are they bathed?
You'll get over this.
You're so lazy.
She was so depressed that she actually stopped feeding her children.
Oh, God.
She would pacify them or ignore the whines and cries. She began picking at her skin. She created bald spots in her hair from tugging and pulling at herself. Andrea would scratch her legs and arms up with her nails constantly. She herself could not eat or drink. Andrea had also begun hearing voices telling her to grab kitchen knives.
Oh my gosh, she's having a full psychotic break.
Rusty came home one day after work to find Andrea in the bathroom holding a knife to her own throat. He was able to calm Andrea down, and Rusty called Andrea's doctor to ask what to do.
Oh, is she taking her medication?
Oh, she's not taking her medication. Weird. Oh, really?
Oh, she said that she didn't need her medication anymore? That's weird.
And you also had another child in between this time. Oh, okay.
That's very interesting.
And now you need my help.
Not gonna say I told you so, but that's fucked up. Like,
it is. The doctor said to get her to treatment immediately.
Yeah.
Andrea actually refused to leave the home, and Rusty had to employ the help of her brother. The two would then drag Andrea into the facility, where she would refuse to sign admittance papers.
Oh my god. At that point, I feel like it shouldn't be an option. Like, she should be admitted involuntarily.
Right.
Because she's clearly a danger to herself and or other people.
Yes. So eventually she would sign the paperwork after being threatened to be held under Texas law.
Okay.
So essentially, like, if she didn't sign the papers, I'm assuming, you know, they would hold her for a certain amount of time, but if she voluntarily checked herself in, she could probably voluntarily check herself out.
Correct, yeah. So that makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, it's probably what she did. Andrea was in treatment for 10 days before being released. She was released once again into the care of her husband, and both sets of parents were aware that Andrea was not to be left alone with the children, both their parents.
To the care or lack thereof of Rusty.
Yes. On May 3rd, Andrea and her mother-in-law took the kids for a walk. And when they arrived back to the house, Andrea began to fill up a bathtub. It wasn't inherently odd. However, when her mother-in-law asked what she was doing, Andrea said, quote, I might need it, end quote.
Oh, I think I remember this.
With that, the mother-in-law let the tub drain. She's like, okay, Andrea. A few days later, Andrea was set to see her doctors for a follow-up visit. Once the story of the bathtub was revealed, Andrea was then placed into treatment again after doctors agreed that this was likely a sign that Andrea intended to harm herself.
Or someone else.
While in treatment, Rusty and the kids never visited Andrea, which was the first time that she had gone to treatment completely alone.
Oh, that's horrible. I mean, I know that's hard for the kids, but at least Rusty, like, come on.
Yeah.
You know?
He's got to work. It's a real world.
Sorry.
He's got to work.
You crossed your eyes when you said work, and it looked funny.
He's got to go to work. I have a job.
Yeah, let me pay all this money for this insurance that doesn't fucking do anything.
Andrea had begun eating and sleeping on her own about 12 days into treatment, and Andrea was released once again into the care of her husband.
Or lack thereof. I repeat.
Yeah, I'm going to keep saying that. Over the course of 1 month, Andrea was to attend 6 outpatient meetings and continue taking her medication.
She didn't show up for any of them.
By June, Andrea had not bathed, barely eaten, not slept, and refused to take her medication.
I'm sorry, but if I was the husband, well, I'm a good person, he's not, but if I was the partner, and for some reason, this person was released back into my care for the third time instead of staying there, the second I noticed something was not okay, I would bring her right the fuck back. Like, I'm sorry, yes. but that is love. Like, bringing someone back when they need it. Not letting them not bathe for a fucking couple months.
Yeah.
Or not eat. You know? It's like, he's just like, okay, oh, you're not eating tonight? Okay, what's for dinner for me? Like, yeah. it's like stupid.
No, I definitely read in a few articles, if not some of the court documents, that Rusty had said, well, yeah, like, every time I would just tell them, like, yeah, like, now I know better. So, like, when she comes home with me, like, I'll be better. I'll be better at, like, recognizing these signs.
Not seeing any effort or evidence of that.
He wanted a zombie, and he was fine with it.
That's gross.
When Rusty approached her doctor about all of these things that were happening, it was suggested that Andrea participate in shock therapy and her medication switched to lithium.
And if that doesn't work, we'll just lobotomize her.
Yeah.
That's horrible. Well, the thing that is frustrating about, I'm not trying to make jokes, I'm like actually really irritated. The thing that's frustrating is that if she had gotten the proper treatment from the beginning, this wouldn't even be fucking happening.
No, it wouldn't.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, if she was on a serious regimen and she had someone that really cared about her and kept her from weaning herself off her medication, maybe, or even before that, who knows? None of this might have happened.
And the fact that, like, he's just like, oh, yeah, like, we have these children together, and he doesn't seem to care, that he worries about their mother's health. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, it's very strange. Mm-hmm. So, fortunately or unfortunately, Andrea would never get this shock therapy or lithium switch. Mm-hmm. On June 20th, the family got up to do their morning routine. Andrea got up with the kids and began to serve them breakfast cereal.
This is 2001 still?
Yes. Rusty came into the kitchen and noticed Andrea's hands were shaky. Rusty asked Andrea if she took her medication that morning, which she said yes. Great due diligence.
Yeah.
Rusty had an important meeting that morning, and he would be leaving the children with their mother for 1 hour before his mother could come and help.
Against the doctor's recommendation.
Yes. They kissed each other goodbye, and Rusty left for work. Andrea then began to fill up the bathtub. While the children were still eating cereal, Andrea picked up 3-year-old Paul, took him to the bathroom, and drowned him in the bathtub. He died within minutes. Andrea washed his hair after. After this, she took Paul's body to her bedroom, laid him on the bed, and tucked him in with a maroon blanket. She then grabbed 2-year-old Luke, 5-year-old John, and a baby bottle full of milk. She held Luke in the water until he was lifeless, killing him in front of his brother John. Andrea then drowned John in the bathtub, while Luke lay there in the water.
Oh my god.
The baby bottle was for baby Mary. Andrea wanted Mary to be by her side while she murdered her brothers, and to keep Mary entertained and next to her, she lured Mary with the baby bottle. Andrea scooped up Luke and John, bringing them to lay beside their brother, and tucked them in. She then went back to the bathroom and drowned baby Mary, just 6 months old. She left Mary floating in the bathtub. She then brought in 7-year-old Noah, her firstborn, into the bathroom. Perhaps Andrea left Noah for last, since she might have felt that he would put up the most struggle. Andrea forced Noah into the tub, where his baby sister was still floating in the water. Noah fought hard, so hard that there were bruises on his body from the struggle. And in the end, Andrea drowned Noah beside his baby sister. She then took Mary's body and laid it with her brother's. She would leave Noah in the bathtub. She then called 911.
Oh my god, I want to throw up. Like, the whole thing is horrendous, but, like, it's extra vulgar that, like, one of the deceased, two separate occasions, one of the deceased children was still in the bathtub when the other one was being killed. Like, that's so fucking horrible.
And then to, like, have to watch that. And I think that Noah had said what happened to baby Mary when he walked in.
It's almost like she was waiting, like, subconsciously waiting for her to be alone with the kids again.
Yeah.
And the bathtub, I mean, it was preparation for sure.
Yeah. I think that when she did the walk with the mother-in-law, mm-hmm. I think that maybe she didn't know that the mother-in-law was still in the house and she filled up the bathtub. And I'm pretty sure it was Noah that had said something to the grandmother about a bathtub being filled. Mm. And then Mrs. Yates went in there and was like, "What are you doing?" She's like, "Oh, and just in case I need it."
Yeah, that's weird.
Very weird. And then I'm glad she said something because that put her into the hospital again. But again, there's no follow-up.
Yeah, no one fucking did anything. Sorry, it's not funny. It's really not. I'm just uncomfortable.
So Andrea then called 911 saying that she needed them to come to the home, that she had done something, but refused to say what she had done.
Oh.
She then called Rusty and told him to come home. Rusty then arrives at his home to find it surrounded by police officers. His mother was by the front door. Andrea was in the back of a police car. He was then informed that his children, all five, had been murdered by his wife. Once at the police station, Andrea said little, but what she did say was that she believed that she was a bad mother, that her children were not developed correctly, and that she was Satan. By proxy, that she had passed this evil on to her children, and that they did not have a chance to grow up to be normal people. Andrea was charged with 5 first-degree murders. Surprisingly to the public, Rusty was in complete support of his wife. He went on multiple news stations to talk about Andrea's struggles. Although some were concerned about Rusty's views on mental health and motherhood, he has expressed to Andrea's brother on many occasions that, quote, "depressed people just need a kick in the pants," end quote.
Wow.
And when questioned as to why Rusty would feel like it was okay to leave Andrea with the children alone, against medical advice, he said that this was in an effort to wean Andrea off of the help of him and his own mother and become more independent. Let that fucking sink in. He clearly doesn't understand how this works. Like, what? It's her duty as a mother to do this independently. This was in support of her.
That's... Oh! I just hit my elbow really hard. Sorry, that was loud as hell. That's horrible.
He thinks that he is being... And maybe it's just the Delulu. I don't know. Maybe it's just... He just really believes that he's doing right by her to be like, pray it away or...
Pull yourself up by your bootstraps.
Yeah.
He's very ignorant.
Yeah.
Very ignorant.
I think that's what it is. I think it's ignorance. I don't think that he's malicious. I don't think he's just probably a simple dude. You know what I mean? Just a simpleton.
Rusty simpleton.
Rusty.
That's horrible. You know what I was thinking? And I don't mean to sound vulgar, but I'm surprised that she didn't attempt suicide again after she killed them.
I might have a note on that.
Oh, okay.
Andrea would plead not guilty by reason of insanity, and in March of 2002, despite Andrea's vast medical and mental history, she was found guilty on all charges.
I mean, it was premeditated with the bathtub, especially since she did it one other time before that.
Yeah.
And there's a witness to that. My throat is hurting. I'm sorry. My voice is like...
However, when her appeal came around, Andrea pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity again, and this time she was found not guilty in 2006.
Wow.
She was serving over 3 years in prison at that point.
Yeah.
She was then moved to an undisclosed facility in Carrollton.
So sorry.
Yeah. Totally. But she resides in Kerrville now. I think that she was originally at another facility, and then they transferred her to a facility in Kerrville.
I didn't realize there was one in Kerrville. It's kind of a small place.
That's what I was thinking. I was like undisclosed. I was like, Kerrville's small. I'm sure you could find the one.
See it right there. Off the highway.
Andrea has never once tried to apply for release. She believes that her punishment for the sins of being a bad mother is to live the rest of her life without her children.
That's so horrible. It's like, I don't know if I like that, though. And that's clearly someone that's very mentally ill talking, but yes. I feel like it might be like I just had to get rid of them because I'm not fit to be a mother. And it's like, that's not fair to them. Like, you could have just given them up for adoption.
Well, you did have that callback. Remember, like, I'll call back to what you said when I had mentioned that Michael had said, if you don't do it successfully before they're 14 or 15, they're damned to go to hell anyways. And I think that that's something that really resonated with her.
Mm-hmm.
And she probably thought, given her suicide attempts, given her the medication, the, you know, not being able to do everything, host parties and Bible studies and take care of her dad and take care of her mom and all of this pressure, she was essentially told, this is what normal people do. Mm-hmm. Normal people do all this stuff and they're just fine. So what's wrong with you?
Yeah. And what's wrong with you that you can't do it? Then your children are damned.
Yes.
Forever. And maybe she thought, like, at that point, because she was spiraling so hard, that she's like, oh my god, like, something really bad's gonna happen to my kids.
Yeah.
Like, I need to... Not excusing, just explaining.
Right. And the truth is that that's not reality.
Right.
Not everyone does those things. Not everyone has to do all that. She did it because she's Andrea. She did it because she wanted to give her all in her marriage and her and being a mother and being a good daughter and being a good... whatever, sister. And she felt like she wasn't good enough, and therefore she influenced her children to not be good enough, and then there's a lineage of people that aren't good enough.
And she failed.
And she failed. She failed them, and instead of them being in hell for the rest of their lives, she's going to kill them now so they can go to heaven, and maybe one day she can see them there.
God, it's horrible.
It's just, it's fucking sad that, like, she was sold that. She was sold
she
that
truly,
bullshit.
I feel, I believe that she truly believed that.
I believe that she truly believed it, too. And I think that's why the insanity plea works for her in her situation, is because she wasn't taught any better. She doesn't know any better. This is the only thing she knew. She was essentially closeted.
Yeah.
You know, she wasn't going to work. The kids never went to school. She probably didn't have any friends.
Well, I guess it's good now that she's in a facility rather than a prison, because now she's probably getting properly medicated and properly monitored like she never had the chance to do before.
Yeah, I agree. And the fact that, the fact that she's never tried to apply to get out, like, shows that whatever is going on is working. Because every other time she's been discharged, she's probably terrified to leave.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's horrible.
Rusty Yates has come back into the spotlight several times over the years, doing various new shows and all that. He filed for divorce from Andrea in 2004, after 2 years of her incarceration. He then remarried a divorcee in 2006, who had two previous children. The couple would have one son together, and they seem to be doing well. However, in a somewhat strange interview with Oprah Winfrey, Rusty would talk about how although he's happy with his family now, nothing ever compared to how happy he was in his relationship with Andrea and sharing their five children. So he essentially was like, and that's paraphrased, I'm not saying that, but he was like, well, they know, essentially they know they're not good enough. They know they're not my Andrea and my five children.
That's awful.
It is so bizarre. I recommend anyone to watch it. You can find it, like, free clips on YouTube. It's bizarre the way that he's like, I'll never love them as much as I loved Andrea and my first five children.
There's something going on with him, too, I think.
I don't know what's going on with that man. Ugh. Anyways, Rusty's new wife would file for divorce in 2015. Oh. So.
Okay, there you go.
Well, there you go.
She's like, we're not good enough.
This guy's a winner.
Yeah.
So Rusty's single, ladies.
Ooh, he's an eligible bachelor if you want to be a sinner and a homemaker.
Accused of being a sinner. Oh, my gosh. Dang. That is the story of Andrea Yates and her children.
I knew, like, when you had said, like, that she filled up the bathtub the first time, it, like, came back to me. I was like, oh, I forgot. I was like, and I think I told you off mic, I was like, I think that she drowns all of her kids in the bathtub, but you didn't respond. Like, you just let me have it. I just didn't say anything. Like, you didn't say anything, and we just kept going.
That is one
That's
of the
horrible.
Ones, like, when I think about mothers in the 90s in true crime, I think about Andrea Yates, I think about Routier, I think about, what's the other one that I did?
Susan Smith.
Susan Smith, yeah. Yeah, I think about those. And just really, Diane Routier, right? Diane? Dana? Diane Routier? Anyways, I think about those because they were really, really, they were just really well-known cases. Yeah. I think maybe for your generation, it would have been, like, the Casey Anthony case, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, like, it was just, yeah, it was a wild time. Parents were lawless.
I'm just surprised that you covered that case, because it's a bunch of kids, you know?
Kiddos.
That's definitely a one that I've heard, like, I had the name, you know, very well known, and I'm glad that you covered it, because I don't know how well I would have done on that one, but just really horrible example of why we do the podcast, you know, like, people need to have not even just the availability and encouragement, but, like, the ongoing support when they want to get treatment and mental health help. Because it's not, especially, disorders like this. Like, she had an unspecified psychotic disorder, right? Mm-hmm. Something like that, in my opinion.
I think they called it a postpartum psychosis.
Yeah, and so, like, with something like that, which is, one, very unpredictable. Like, who's to say the first medication that you get prescribed is going to work? But, like, that's not something that is completely going to go away, like, ever. Like, the doctor said, like, you're going to need to have someone that is willing to be that support system and willing to, like, help remind you to take your medication and tell the doctor the second they see something abnormal and protect the children, of course. And unfortunately, Rusty just wasn't that person.
Mm-hmm.
And it just turned out really badly for everyone.
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I think the postpartum of that, you were right in saying it's just boom, one right after the other. And there's many families that, you know, have a religious setting or background, and that's something that they wholeheartedly believe in. And I'm not dogging that at all. I'm just saying, I wonder how many other mothers out there get so overwhelmed with so many kids so quickly. Like, I could never do that.
Yeah. I've seen, like, they did an episode of Grey's about it, and there was this woman, they had like five, she was like pregnant with baby number six, and they were the couple was like that. Of course, this is fictional, but she had come to the hospital, and she said that, like, their religion doesn't believe in contraception, but she physically doesn't think she can have any more kids, like, it's too much to handle. And she asked, can you please tie my tubes without my husband knowing
when
I deliver this baby? And they're like, no, we can't do that. And then they do it anyway. Well, they didn't do it anyway. They accidentally.
I'm sorry, but I'm thinking, what a strong relationship where she wants to lie to her husband about not wanting to have any more children.
I know. But that's what I'm saying. Like, Andrea probably didn't think she could say no to that, you know?
That's true. And
yeah, that's just, it's just hard. It's really hard, too, because you don't want to, like, discount someone's beliefs and stuff like that, but this is just a case where it went too far. I think so too. I feel like there's someone behind me. I don't know why I keep getting a weird, like, breeze.
Ew, it's rusty.
Oh my god, stop.
All right, well, that's it for us today.
Yeah, good case, dude.
Yeah, thanks.
All right,
make sure you guys you know, check out that social media, give us a dollar.
Yeah, and thanks everyone that played our little How Well Do You Know DAK trivia game on Instagram.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, we are actually sisters. If you listen, you should know that. But I think some people said that we're just friends. I was like, that's funny.
That's cute. We're friends and sisters.
That's true. Okay, we will see you guys next week with another case.
Yeah.
All right.
Love you.
Bye.
Bright Cellars is a monthly wine club that matches you to delicious wines tailored completely to your tastes. Take their personalized 7-question quiz and be paired with wines you are sure to love. You can even improve your matches by rating each wine after you try them. Bright Cellars offers a unique tasting experience, as each bottle comes with tasting notes and pairing suggestions. It's like having your very own sommelier at home. And their expert wine concierge will customize your subscription to fit any lifestyle. Click the link in the show notes for an exclusive offer from Bright Cellars today.